Good afternoon. Thanks so much for tuning in today. I'm Susie Larson, and this is Live the Promise, and we are here to help you engage in a strong and active walk of faith. I'm thrilled you tuned in today because this is one of your favorites from what I hear. Every month we have our friend Dr. Troy Spurl of Synapse Center for Health and Healing on the show. We call it Health and Healing with Dr. Troy, where we take your health questions. And I would have to say, I think we probably share the passion that God wants you well. We're both equally passionate about that. He's the expert, but we both share the passion. And I really believe this, that God wants you well. And so often we live in a culture that treats symptoms. And I sometimes think the treatment is worse than the ailment. But if we could just push pause, if we could seek some wisdom, if we could tweak our diet and our approach to life and our unbelief mindset that Dr. Troy talks about, it could make all the difference in the world. And as we're heading into the holidays, so often people throw caution to the wind and they go, I'll put it off till January 1st. But if you don't feel well, today would be a really good time to make some choices and to practice some restraint and to determine, Lord, I want to cooperate with you in my healing process. In fact, Doc, you and I will maybe talk about that if there's a break in calls about our part and our cooperation with God. But we're taking calls. The phone line is open, 877-933-2484. And Shelley's checking in from Minnesota. She's got a question for you today. Hey, Shelley, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I had a total hysterectomy, and then my thyroid was removed also 30 years ago. And so I was put on Synthroid, and I've been taking that for all those years, which kind of upsets my stomach in the morning, but I still continue to take it. And a question, you know, I would like to, I've been put on antidepressants because of the imbalance, you know. And that's been 30 years of the same dose and this and that. And I would like to get off all the medications if possible. Also, the question is that I had had a CT scan with a radioactive iodine that they inserted in my bloodstream, and I was very allergic to it. So I'm just wondering, does that have anything to do with salt? I guess that should cover my questions.
Thank you, Shelley.
Yes, so just want to make sure we're clear. If you've had your thyroid completely removed, then there's absolutely no way you can get off medication. If you have your thyroid producing actual thyroid hormone, that's a different story. So your doctor, just trust your doctor on that one as far as what they're saying. When someone tells me that they take Synthroid and they get an upset stomach, that's unusual. So I will say there was this may be part of your scenario because it does lead to depression. So we have found that people who are wheat or gluten sensitive don't do well with Synthroid because there is a fraction of gluten in Synthroid. And so a lot of people also, when they have levels of reaction to gluten or wheat, one of the different paths it can take is depression. And so for me, I look at that and I say, I'm intrigued to find out, do you have a gluten or wheat sensitivity, intolerance, or actual allergy? It's highly unlikely it's an allergy. So it'd be an intolerance or sensitivity. And so I would get that tested to see if that's a part of it. If it is, your doctor can find a different thyroid hormone that works better for you that still keeps things in balance, that doesn't cause some of the other dysfunction there. And then it would be important to avoid the known food reactant. Now, if you're producing thyroid and you are not needing, if you're producing active thyroid, then there is a chance for or possibility to get off of the actual medication when you're under the supervision of someone who is trained in doing that. So to do that with this level of with depression and everything, there is a change with diet and lifestyle. And if you're willing to do that, then identifying what foods you're reacting to and what nutrients you're deficient in would be highly likely. The radioactive iodine is not necessarily a salt thing at all. It's probably due to a deficiency in some level of antioxidants, or it can be a very harsh procedure for some people. So it just means that there's some deficiencies that have to be identified, probably in the antioxidant realm.
Wow, thanks for that. Just, I don't know if you picked this up, but we've talked about this before, but there are people who consume corn or gluten who may have anxiety or depression issues who could treat that some, right? Some could clear it up.
Absolutely. So that when I first started, it was actually one of the things that I was shocked by that we started checking food reactions right away. And I was surprised what would clear up. Someone would come in and I would think, man, this is going to take a long time to get them well. And they come back and they say, Doc, I'm 90% better after 1 week. I'm like, what? Let me check everything. And sure enough, they're just improving. And it's because they have such an intense reaction to certain foods that they had no idea because their stomach didn't get upset. And so some people, foods is such a big deal. And generally speaking, the more we've changed or altered our food, the more potential for reactivity has in us. So that's the first place to start for most people. Pull foods out and eat clean for a little bit and see what changes. And yeah. I think people will be surprised how much of their health or how their poor health might be coming from what the food they're eating.
You and I recorded an interview off the air, of course, before the show. And one thing you said was when people come in like from a car accident or they have an injury somehow, they hurt their neck and you're like, okay, let's talk about your diet. And they're like, no, I want to talk about the car accident. But you're saying in order to heal properly, you've got to support your system with your diet, and inflammation is going to be directly connected to what
Absolutely.
You're eating.
So it is rare for someone to come in and we don't tweak their diet to reduce inflammation. If I want someone to heal faster, I reduce all the other things in their body that are causing inflammation. The fastest and easiest way to do that is through diet. So if someone's consuming a food reactant like gluten or dairy that they react to and they're consuming sugar, we'll pull that out to help them heal faster from the car accident. And we can, and we see that constantly. Mm. There are some people who they don't actually get to a point of healing until we do that. We know they had that problem before the accident. And that's one of the reasons why, too, we've had people who have been in a head-on collision in the highway. A particular couple in my mind, they're in their 80s right now, head-on collision and walked away from it. A couple aches and pains. They recovered in 3 weeks. And then I've had people that were in a parking
lot. Because their diet was clean?
Because, they're balanced, they're clean, and they're living life in a good way. And then I've had people in a car accident going 5 miles an hour in a parking lot that truly have one of the worst whiplashes you've ever seen.
Because their bodies can't handle it.
Because their bodies couldn't handle it. It took that little amount of extra physical force for everything to break down. So all of the stress that person was under before, mental, chemical, and physical, just was the 5 mile an hour car accident was enough to tip
the tipping point.
It was completely devastating to them.
Just fascinating. 877-933-2484. Sharon is checking in from Hutchinson. Hey, Sharon, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you. I got so many problems. I'm 69 years old. I have diagnosed myself with a immune deficiency. I've been allergic to flesh food all my life, and I had other allergies as a child, but I outgrew those. But I wish I could see this doctor. And I do so much. I'm a vegan. I mean, obviously, I've been a vegetarian all my life, and I've been a vegan vegetarian for 35, 40 years now. I'm 69, and I just, about a year ago, I added eggs because of my limited amount of things to eat. But this methylation, I've never heard of it, and you mentioned it. It had to do with the brain, the heart, and the liver. And I know I have problems kind of in, especially my brain and my liver.
So do you want him to explain a little bit more about that, Sharon?
Yeah, I guess. I wish I could.
Yeah, let's do that.
Yeah, without knowing a lot, what I'm going to do is talk in generalities here. And I'll say my healthiest person that I see is a vegan, and my most unhealthy person is a vegan. And so there's a lot of variables. So when we look at the vegan diet, the biggest thing is, are you getting enough protein? Now, it is possible to get enough protein in a vegan diet, but one of the things that you picked up on, I think you're bang on, is the methylation problems. And so vegan diets, if you've been doing it for a long time, vegetarian and vegan, you know how important they really kind of drill into your head how important B12 is, because we don't get that from a lot of areas other than the meat itself. And so, and you do, I mean, you do take, get in the nuts and the other seeds that can have some of it, but methylation problems, you can get tested. A lot of times it'll show up in your blood work with homocysteine. So if you are going to the doctor, you can actually get them to test you. They have genetic tests for methylation problems, but they can also test and see how your homocysteine levels are. The serum B12 is not a good test. And so a lot of times the doctors will order that thinking they're really checking to see how you're doing, but it's not the best test. Methylation will be a lot of the B vitamins that vegans tend to be deficient in. And so there are supplements you can take. One is called MethylCare, one of my favorite supplements. You can go into your doctor and they can give you methylcobalamin, which is the methylated form of B12. If you go in and get a B12 shot with that form and your brain turns back on temporarily, that's another sign that you're deficient in it. So talk to your doctor, see if they can get some testing done on the methylation side of it. And the two things to try and remember are homocysteine and also the methylmalonic acid is another one that can test and see how well you're doing with the B12.
Thanks so much for that. And Kim from Lionel Lakes, you are up next. It is Health and Healing with Dr. Troy. I'm Susie Larson. This is Live the Promise. Also, I see a few emails that came in. We'll do our best to get through everybody's questions. So excited to talk with you and help you even just take some next steps on your health journey. So don't go away. More great conversation is up ahead. Sorry about that. Just tripped over myself. We'll be back in a minute. This season. Thanks so much for tuning in. I'm Susie Larson. This is Live the Promise. Honored and blessed to have our friend Dr. Troy in studio with us. His practice is located in Eagan, Minnesota. It's called Synapse Center for Health and Healing. He joins us every month to answer your health questions. And I just really want you to get a vision for what's possible. Imagine, because it takes work and we do have to partner with God in this, but imagine a year from now gaining all kinds of ground and really unlayering the onion, so to speak, so that you just experience healing on levels you never thought possible. Get a vision for that and then continue to take the next steps. And again, Doc's here just to answer your questions. And here's the number, 877-933-2484. Kim is checking in from Lionel Lakes. Hey, Kim, thanks for holding. You're on the air.
All right. So I have a family history of early onset cataracts. I'm 49 years old. 2 years ago, I went to the eye doctor. They found cataracts. I have two siblings who have already had them removed in their early 50s. I went to the eye doctor on Monday, and now in my right eye, the pressure has raised. It's higher than the normal level. So I'm wondering what I can do as far as diet to help my eyes, or is it too late?
Well, I don't want to lead with yes, it's too late, but the reality is that it might be. So, as far as what you can do, I'd still encourage you to keep investigating, look at it, because whatever you find out and figure out, you'll be able to pass on to your kids, and that'll be able to help regardless. But when it comes to the pressure in the eye, there are different variables. If there's a genetic component to that, that's kind of a game changer. So it's a hard one to offset. However, having said that, many times we see genetic tendencies that can be influenced by our environment. And so sometimes the genetic component is just how you were built. For example, we have some people who genetically have appendix problems. Well, it's because the appendix, when it's made, is more at a 90-degree angle than a 30-degree angle, and that's enough for it to cause some problems. And so when it comes to the cataracts and pressure in the head, you can do stuff that help minimize head pressure. So the first thing is structurally we have seen if we can improve blood flow to the eyes, then that can help reduce the pressure if the blood flow can go in and go out. It's like our other organs. There is a circulation scenario to it. So we want to help promote that. The way you can do that is through craniosacral therapy, deep breathing exercises where you're truly getting the breath going in and out, but with the head itself. The other part of this is diet-wise, identifying what foods you might be reacting to, because when you have a negative reaction to a food, it can cause a mucosal swelling. So our membranes in our sinus and in our cavities in our head will swell a little bit. That will increase the pressure, and that can be enough sometimes to affect the actual eyeballs as far as the pressure in the eyes. Cataracts is a tough one because we don't actually know if we're preventing it when we prevent it. So I do know once you've got it, it's been something we haven't been able to reverse or anything like that. You can do things like lutein and other antioxidants that helps with macular degeneration, helps with the health of the eye. So we do know that that antioxidant, particularly for eye health, is important. And we have seen some people, there are some testimonies out there where cleaning up their diet as far as getting the antioxidants has seemed to help. And so lutein is the main one for the eye health, but that's mostly, again, for macular degeneration than it is for the actual cataracts. So decreasing the head pressure is very, very important. If there's something like snoring, sleep apnea, or anything else that goes with it, then there's a structural component that can also be addressed by a chiropractor when they actually adjust that area of the occiput. It can actually start to decrease the pressure. We have a test that we use at our clinic, and we increase the pressure of the head. We actually have them blow through their nose and their mouth, but they seal off their nose with their fingers and kind of pinch the nostrils closed, and they keep their mouth closed, and that increases the pressure up into the head. You know, it's kind of like what you used to do to blow out the ears, if you would, when you're on an airplane. If you do that test and a previously strong muscle goes weak, there's a sign that the pressure in the head is too high. And so we've looked at the veins and arteries of the eyeballs, and we compare the pressure, or the ratio, I should say, of the two arteries to veins, and we can see that there is a change in that ratio. So a normal ratio is 2.5 to 1 as far as arterial to veins, but you need a doctor to look at that. But the main point I want to make really is that we can alter the pressure in the head by changing diet and then getting the physical structure of the head worked on.
Interesting. Okay, we've got about a few minutes here to our hard break at the bottom, but we're going to grab Deborah from Minneapolis. Hey, Deborah, we've got just a few minutes to our bottom of the hour break, so as best as you can, be as concise as you can with your question so the doc has time to answer it. You're on the air.
Well, thank you for taking my call. I'm 62 years old, and within the course of the past 2 years, I gained and lost approximately 20 to 25 pounds by just reducing a lot of unhealthy foods in my diet. My question is, in the last few months, I get leg cramps in my legs at night, and it's both of my legs, usually at the same time and in the same spot, which is to the right of my shin. And I'm wondering, is there something that I'm lacking or possibly lacking in my diet? I don't take supplements. I don't eat a lot of meat, but I'm not a vegetarian, so I do eat meat on occasion. But I'm wondering, is there something that's diet-related that could be the cause of these leg cramps?
Yes, absolutely. It is interesting that it's happening in the same spot on both sides. So that usually means it's actually coming from a low back issue. So if you have an L5 or an L4 that is the bottom bones of your back and it slides forward, it can irritate the nerves. And just by kind of moving in bed and having that scenario with the cramping, that's one of the things that comes to mind. Usually, if it's a mineral deficiency, it won't affect the same muscle in the same spot at the same time. But if it were a mineral deficiency, we'd be thinking two things. Number one, water, first and foremost. You have to make sure you have enough water. Otherwise, you can start to get cramping. Secondly, magnesium is the most common mineral deficiency, and it can cause some challenges. That particular muscle is related to adrenal glands, and so sometimes adrenal dysfunction can also be a part of that, and that would be a deficiency in B5 or B6. So those are the most common ones based on what you were just relaying. Sodium also is part of that. Sodium and potassium are also part of that conversation. It'll be one of those if it's a mineral scenario. So the minerals, dehydration, and then potentially the low back problem, which can happen with weight loss, actually, funny enough, because we end up getting an inflammatory response. And when we lose weight, it actually is a little bit hard on the liver gallbladder, and there's an area in our back, the L4, that goes off that we find all the time. And so the weight loss actually is a potential clue to this whole scenario. So,
Wow. So
I'd actually see if you have an L5 or L4 spondylolisthesis is what it's called.
Interesting. Okay, we got about a minute and a half because she was so concise and because you were so concise. So tell me if you
want to... Don't hear that too often.
Yeah. If you want to tackle this, just you got a minute and a half and we can take it on the other side. But this woman is writing in about her 25-year-old son. He's experienced sleep paralysis for years, and he says he doesn't feel rested, and when he wakes up, he's just exhausted. His doctor did tell him he's low on vitamin D.
Yeah, so this is actually what I'm writing about right now and studying on. We've seen this with REM sleep disorders, in particular one called upper airway resistance syndrome. And the cause of that is dysfunction with the airway secondary to digestive disturbances. And so vitamin D is a part of that because it helps regulate the ileocecal valve. We tend to see some stomach acid problems as well. But that sets up a weakness in the airway, and when you get into deep sleep, the airway is supposed to be maintained. There's a point where our entire body goes paralyzed. And then that's when the brain reboots, and it sends signals to our immune system to repair and replenish for the next day. And it's supposed to happen a couple times a night. And so if the airway is collapsing during that state, then what's happening is the brain doesn't get oxygen, and he'll release a hormone, adrenaline or cortisol, which is a fight or flight hormone. And so he'll wake up in that paralyzed state. And it's awful. It's not much fun, but a REM sleep disorder, they'll stay in that state. The brain is not getting out of it. So you have to fix the airway problem and then the area of the brain that relates to the adrenal glands and the digestive system. But it's very fixable. Vitamin D is a big part of it. You got to get vitamin D up to as close to 80 as possible.
It's fixable. I hope you're hearing that today. Be encouraged. We've got more questions. I'd love to hear from you. 877-933-2484. We'll be back in a bit. Thanks so much for tuning in today. I'm Susie Larson. This is Live the Promise. We have our good friend Dr. Troy in studio every month. We call it Health and Healing with Dr. Troy. And we do this because we want you healthy. And I believe with all of my heart that God wants you well as well. And Dr. Troy and I have talked about this so many times. But because we live in a culture just so addicted to either treating symptoms or ignoring symptoms, people live in a low level of misery. And there's so much that we can do, tweaks we can make. If we're willing to cooperate with God and to step up and to get some things out of our diet, we will experience an improvement in our health that may just blow us away. So we would love to take your questions as best we can here. 877-933-2484. Amy's checking in. Oh, sorry, Amy, you have to wait. We've got an email that's been waiting a little bit, and now I'm going to turn it over to my co-host, Dr. Troy. He's going to handle a question here because it's too complicated for me to even explain it.
Well, there's just a lot here. So this comes from Carmen, and she's been dealing with kidney stones for 2 years that are 100% uric acid, and the reality is they keep coming back. The doctors have her on medication, but they're wondering, she's wondering, what else can I do? Part of the history is also that there's type 2 diabetes, sleep apnea, high blood pressure, high cholesterol, high triglycerides, and past breast cancer.
Wow.
And so, the answer to that is yes. She asks, is all of this contributing to the stone problems? The answer is absolutely yes, because uric acid is actually made in the liver system. And when you have diabetes and your triglycerides are high, that's a sign that the blood sugar is not being regulated properly. And the inflammation that's coming from that basically needs to be corrected through the liver system. So when you have inflammation in the intestinal tract, it can drive that liver system, and we see cholesterol start to go up and triglycerides go up. So even if you're managing the diabetes with insulin, it's not managing the inflammation. And so the reality is it's the liver system is what has to be helped, the liver immune system. So it 100% is a process where if you start to decrease the overall acid and inflammation in the body, then we'll start to see some changes. A full lab panel will be needed because we need to understand how stressed is the liver system. We need to look at the diet side of this because whatever set up the type 2 diabetes is also contributing to inflammation. And I want people to really hear this. Obesity equals inflammation. And so it doesn't matter if you feel pain or not. If you have been diagnosed with obesity, which is common with type 2 diabetes, it's not 100%, but it's common. If you've been diagnosed with obesity, that means you are inflamed, whether you feel anything or not. And so it can affect the liver system, your immune system greatly, and your ability to detoxify. The kidneys, kidney stones are one of the most painful things you'll run into. The kidneys are another backup system. When the liver is not doing well, it only has the kidneys, the lungs, the skin, and your digestive tract to get things out. And so it'll come out one of those areas. So the key here is to decrease the overall inflammation. This is a process because you'd want to work on the liver system, the digestive system, start slowly getting down the blood sugar and the type 2 diabetes under control, and start measuring the other inflammatory markers. C-reactive protein might be high. Homocysteine might be high. It's important to start to get a gauge on those areas. The liver needs antioxidants. When you're antioxidant deficient and you are acidic, that is the perfect environment for cancer.
Wow.
With a history of cancer, breast cancer, most likely it was hormone related, but not always. It can be inflammatory breast cancer. Either way, it's the same scenario. So that tells us there's a compromised system there already. We don't have inflammation under control. The antioxidants needed for the liver are tremendous. The liver needs antioxidants, same as the immune system, to help you detoxify. So this is an antioxidant deficient individual who, Carmen, it's really important to get that liver supported, decrease the inflammation, the acidity in the body. And so it's a whole process to start to do that, but it's very, very doable.
So would the ketogenic diet be, for someone with diabetes, you know, I'm sure that they're probably afraid, especially if obesity is connected, to do a high-fat, high-protein diet, but the sugar is more the culprit than anything, right?
Yes, absolutely. And so the only thing is with the ketogenic diet is you have to make sure the kidneys are healthy enough to handle the ketogenic diet, because if you start pulling acid out too much. So with this particular scenario, I would support liver system first to get that pathway going and working so that we can get as much detoxification going through the liver system, because it's backed up and it's shunting everything over to the kidneys already. With ketogenic, that's going to take things through the kidneys first for the most part. Mm. And so it's something where you want to manage the blood sugar. Plus, when it comes to diabetes, if you feel normal and your blood sugar is at 160, which the rest of us is very high, but that's your normal, if we drop you down real quickly to 120, it's the same as having a hypoglycemic low blood sugar reaction.
Oh, wow. Okay.
They feel like they're in a coma. And even though their blood sugar is high and normal, that's why you have to pay attention to where they've been. It's all relative. So our type 2 diabetics, we look at how long have you been resting at this higher blood sugar. We have to slowly get you down so your brain and your organs are okay with this new blood sugar status. And eventually they can get down into a normal range over time. But you don't want to do it too quickly because that'll shock the organs, basically.
It's what we call asking the body nicely, right?
Correctly,
yeah.
Yes.
All right, Amy's checking in from Duluth. Hey, Amy, you're on the air. Oh, Amy, you there? Might have lost her.
Yep, I'm here.
Oh, there she is. Hey, you got a question for Dr.
Hello?
Troy?
We've got you, Amy.
Hi. Okay, so my daughter, she's 12. She was diagnosed with non-rheumatoid juvenile arthritis. And she's currently taking methotrexate and some meloxicam to treat But it's not controlled, and the doctor wants her to start, like, Humira or something. And, well, she also has a heart defect that she was born with, and I'm concerned about the conventional methods of treatment and how they're just going to overall affect her well-being. I'm wondering if you have any suggestions for how to treat it. We don't even know what caused the juvenile arthritis. I don't know. Do you have any?
Yeah, it. There are generally 8 different areas we look at when it comes to that scenario to treat it. I'll call non-traditionally or with functional medicine. We want again treat it almost like an autoimmune disorder, where we're looking at what could have set up the an immune confused immune system or an inability of the immune system to detoxify properly. So it is. Important to look at the potential triggering factors. A lot of times it can be an infection. It can be a stress response, hormone response. It can be what we call leaky gut, which can happen from trauma. And even that, it's hard to say this because we don't know what potential trauma there would have been, but it could have been a fall, a concussion early on. A concussion has been shown to cause leaky gut within a week. Sometimes it's even the birthing process where if sometimes suction was used or it didn't go smoothly, then there can be some cranial trauma that can set up those scenarios. There's a lot of factors. But at this point, managing the digestive system, identifying the food reactants can be of benefit, and making sure that there is no hidden infection or looking for the infection scenarios. Yeast, fungus, mold, stuff like that. It is very, very common to have dairy sensitivities with juvenile arthritis components. And so it's one of those scenarios where you just have to manage it as best you can at this point. And the good thing is actually if the methotrexate's not performing like it should, that's actually pretty intriguing to me. So that generally means it would be worth your while to try some of the natural approaches of looking for infection and treating it, cleaning up the diet, which is not easy with the kids, but it's very doable. We pulled one of our children off of gluten, and she felt so much different that she kept herself off for 5 years without us having to say a word. And so it becomes very, very important. Nutritional deficiencies, most common is the vitamin D and the omega-3. So getting those assessed is very, very important. And then sometimes heavy metals can also be a trigger. So being exposed to heavy metals that could be in amalgams or flu shots, vaccines, stuff like that, it's relevant in this conversation. So you want to just see if that's a potential problem as far as any toxic exposure that way.
Thanks so much, Amy. Bless you. You're a good mom, by the way. Sherry's checking in from Cottage Grove. Hey, Sherry, you're on the air.
Oh, thank you, Dr. Troy. I sure hope you can fix this problem. I'm 72. I'm on no medication. I feel great, but I've been dealing with this thing for 2 years, and none of my family can understand it. And I have a bunch of nurse practitioners and my children, and nobody can answer this question. But the last couple years, when I eat potatoes or potato chips or even potato starch in soups, I tell you, I go from being 72 to about 99. And I can't, it just like cripples me to, like I can't even get out of bed. And it takes like 2.5 days before I'm back to normal. And I heard there's a chemical in potatoes, but I've eaten them all my life. And why I'm having this all of a sudden, but nobody can understand how it can do me in like that.
Yeah, so that's interesting. There is a couple variables here. So there is chemicals that are sprayed on a lot of our food. So I'd be interested to see if there is, if it's organic, is the same reaction as non-organic. That'd be something to play with. Also, we can develop food reactants at any point in our life. And so even though we've been eating it our entire life, we can get to a point where we lose enzymes. So there's a particular type of enzyme that is needed for breaking down the starch of potato. And so we can sometimes become deficient. Now, magnesium and digestive enzymes can help offset that. So what I would do is first look at organic. If organic changes it, then it's the chemical they're spraying the potatoes with. If the organic potatoes don't do anything, then try just getting regular digestive enzymes with magnesium, and it'll take a couple months of doing that before you notice change if it's the magnesium. But the digestive enzymes you may notice within the first couple times. And that's what you'd want to start with. If the digestive enzymes help, then it means that you've started to become deficient, which does happen with age, in enzymes. It's kind of like lactose intolerance for milk. There's a very specific enzyme that people may not be very efficient at using. So if there's any, it would be interesting. I don't know if she's still online, but if she has a family history, if she's Irish, I would be interested in knowing that, if there's a family line where you're Irish.
Hmm.
Not Irish, Northern European at all, like
European, a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so there's in the Northern Europeans, there's an actual gene. It's called the HLA-DQ gene, where it makes people a little bit more sensitive to these types of scenarios. And so we can, as we start to become a little more acidic, that can happen. So I would focus more on the enzymes and the magnesium and see if that has any impact. And if it doesn't, then call back in at a later date or send an email, because these are the things I like to explore.
He actually gets a spring in his step when he gets a challenge like this one. So I hope we can help you, Diane, and I think that's a great start. We're going to grab Mick from Connecticut before we take our final break here, just because he's been holding for a few minutes. I want to make sure he gets his question answered. Hey, Mick, thanks for holding. You're on the air.
Hello.
Hey. What's your question for the doc today?
I've had issues with gout for about 20 years, and I try to control it with diet to limit my proteins and purines so I don't have any organ meats or anything like that. But I keep getting flare-ups, and I do not like taking medicine if I can help it. So, but when I do get an attack, I take indomethacin as a preventative or to help the swelling. So I don't know what else I can do with my diet to help decrease this situation.
Quite a bit, actually. So gout, when you've done, the first thing is to do what you've done, really limit the purine-rich foods, but also other rich foods can do it too. So funny enough, we're starting to see more and more people, when they have too much sugar, it can also trigger the same types of reactions. So it's not just the purine-rich foods at this point, and it boils down to, again, supporting the liver and lymph system. So you want to make sure that the calf muscles are not tight, because if your calf muscles get tight, they can actually set up a scenario where you get a gout episode. And if you go a couple nights without sleeping, your calf muscles will get tight, really tight. And then we can start to see some consequences with the feet. Some people will get cold feet. Some people will get, if they're more predisposed to it, things like gout. So it's not just about the purines and even the liver and the lymph system. So sometimes there's some structural components to it. So the sleep becomes very, very important. Physical exercise and walking becomes important. And one of the challenges is when you have gout, you can't put pressure on the toes. So you have to be cycling and getting your legs moving to make sure those muscles are still contracting. And heat packs over top of the calf area can help with the actual muscle part of this. When it comes to the actual liver side of it, the best thing you can do is either fast or eat a really liver-friendly diet, which basically is real plant-based for a week. But you have to make sure you're having regular bowel movements, because once you're emptying out properly, you'll start a full-blown detox. And it's almost like a siphon on the lymph system. You start pulling those acids out. So gout is basically a buildup of too much of the acid, and you've got to get that out either through the liver or kidneys. And so an acid-cleansing diet becomes very, very important when it comes to the actual gout stuff. So it's more than just the purines. And you can do that. Ultra Clear pH is a product that we've used in the past with their dietary program for 2 weeks, and that has pretty much knocked out 90% of the gout that we see. And sometimes people have to go 4 or 6 weeks in some of the worst case scenarios. But that's very, very important.
Thank you so much, Mick, for that call. Got one segment left with Dr. Troy. It's Health and Healing with Dr. Troy. Just a few minutes left. 877-933-2484. Don't go away. We'll be back in a minute. Much good music out there. Thanks for tuning in. Susie Larson here. This is The Promise. We've got our good friend Dr. Troy in studio. He joins us every month. Dr. Troy Spurl, he's with Synapse Center for Health and Healing, founder of that practice. And we know we've got listeners from all over the world, but I get this question all the time. So I just want to make sure I mention that Synapse Center for Health and Healing is located in Eagan, Minnesota. People travel from all over to see him. So maybe you can do that too, right? He's got an amazing team of doctors, even if you're not able to get in with him. But we've literally got 6 minutes or so. We got a whole bunch of calls. We'll do our best to get through as many as we can. Diane is checking in from Stillwater with a question. And just for the sake of those calling in, if we could ask every remaining call to get to your question as soon as you can so Doc can get to his answer. Diane, you're on the air.
Thank you. Thanks for taking my call. My question is about my husband. He started with a bladder infection about a year and a half ago, and then it apparently went into his prostate because every time he tries to get off the antibiotics, it comes right back. Mm. So he's been on 2 different types of antibiotics for about 1 year and 4 months. And he has altered his diet quite a bit by eliminating alcohol, caffeine, and most sugar. Just wondering if you have any other suggestions.
Yeah, so that's a great start. And so basically, if an infection is coming back, that means the environment is ripe for that infection. So there's 2 things that come to mind that might be simple fixes. Number one, it's an exercise called a bladder lift. If there's an infection in the area of the bladder and the bladder has been compressed because maybe at one point he had extra weight or something on there in the front midsection, which us guys tend to do, then that can actually have a little bit of compression on the bladder. So when you lie on your back and put both hands between the pubic bone and the belly button and do just a compression, push on the bladder and then scoop up towards your chin and then do a sit-up, that's called a bladder lift. What it does is it helps pump out the fluid potentially in the bladder that might be pooling. So infections occur when the environment is ripe for it. So you don't want any fluid pooling there. So that's first and foremost. And after you've had one infection, it weakens the nerves, so you can't push the fluid out. So we want to make sure we're getting strong enough, getting rid of all the fluid that's in the bladder, first and foremost. The second part of it is really making sure you're getting the pH of the body balanced as much as possible, which the dietary changes you've done will help quite a bit. You can actually check it with pH strips. You can check your saliva and your urine pH strips, and you should see a pattern there where you're actually the urine is quite a bit more acidic than the saliva. But if you start to track that, there are some charts online that can tell you how well you're doing with the dietary changes. We use what's called the lemon pH test at the clinic to actually see how your body reacts to pH changes. And so you can actually do that test to start to measure the actual acidity changes in the bladder. Secondly, they do have some natural antibiotics that then can transition into probiotics a lot better. So Biocidin is the name of the product that we generally recommend, and that can be used to kill off the bacteria, work with the medical doctor to go off of the antibiotics, and then you have to repopulate the good probiotics right away for the intestinal tract, not for the bladder itself, but for the intestinal tract. And so that should help set up a scenario that gets the environment a little bit better as far as not allowing for bacteria to grow. And then most importantly, you have to support the immune system. If he's getting chronic infection, there's a component of his immune system that's compromised. And so vitamin D is the most important. fish oils, and then antioxidants. So there's going to be something he's deficient in to help boost up his immune system. If there's a sleep disorder, sleep apnea, something like that, that plays into this, and he's just a little bit more compromised. His white blood cells on his lab report, if they're under 5, that's a sign of chronic infection causing immune compromise. We want to see them between 5 and 8 optimally. So that'll tell you if his immune system needs a little bit more support.
Okay, thank you so much, Diane, for that call. That was a fascinating answer. We've got Tim checking in from North Dakota. My guess is we maybe can take one more call after Tim, and I think that would be Elizabeth. So Jennifer, Stan, Liz, oh my goodness, if you could email me your questions, we can try to tackle them next month. But let's take Tim's question.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. About 15 years ago, I started having some insomnia problems, and I think it was kicked off by some anxiety issues. My doctor at the time put me on Ambien, and I was on Ambien for several years, and then she decided that, or heard that it could cause, you know, early dementia, so we switched some other things. I tried some Trazodone and several other things over the years. And then for the last couple years, I have been on clonazepam, which works pretty good, but just 1 milligram a night. Sometimes I cut a pill in half. But I haven't done a sleep study. I do not have insurance currently, but I don't snore. I don't have any symptoms of that. But I'm wondering, now a lot of times I just lay there, and I just don't sleep. I don't worry about anything, and I don't know if it's my diet. Or if there's some things that I can try that I can get back into a sleep pattern and not have to rely on the medication.
Yeah, great question. There's absolutely a lot you can do. So when things are kicked off by anxiety years ago, there's some interesting scenarios there. So the digestive system is very much involved. The serotonin that our brain needs mostly comes from the digestive system. And so that's one of the first areas I'd look at to see if there's anything causing a problem with the serotonin. Now, dairy sensitivity is the most common one for as far as foods, and then it can be anything else that causes inflammation. There is a syndrome that if you had a strep infection a year before your anxiety started or in around that area, there's a scenario where there is an antibiotic-resistant strep that gets into your digestive tract. It's called PANDA syndrome. It manifests as anxiety, but eventually will cause sleep disorders, especially insomnia, in adults. In kids, it causes ADD and ADHD mostly, but I would look and just rule out that, clean up your diet and get off of any foods that you're reacting to. They'll be there. If there was anxiety before or if there's insomnia now, we know there's something not working. And sleep is, if it's not from thinking too much or stressed out, you can almost take to the bank. 80% of the time, it's going to be digestive tract, something your digestive tract, a food reactant, inflammation, or that hidden infection. Then we could be dealing with some potential nutrient deficiencies that are more brain-related for insomnia. You can actually retrain yourself to start falling asleep by waking yourself up every 4 hours and getting on a cycle with that too, but that's a whole different conversation.
And maybe next month we'll dedicate a segment to retraining yourself to fall asleep. Tim, I wish we could give you more time. Elizabeth, Jennifer, Stan, so very sorry, but I hope you'll call back next month. You've been listening to Live the Promise. I'm Susie Larson. In a bit, you'll find a podcast of today's program on our website at myfaithradio.com. Maybe one of these months we'll keep Dr. Troy for an extra couple minutes, take a couple calls off the air. We'll see if we can do that. But either way, we'll meet you back here next time.